This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Yak! Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of the Ticket City Podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, joined today by the entire Orange Bloods group. It's 2 weeks in a row. Football season must be over. Anwar Richardson, Alex Dunlap, Jason Sukumel, Dustin McComas. Greetings, fellas. We've got quarterbacks and transfers and portals and all just kinds of stuff to talk about today on this Thursday when news started breaking on Wednesday night.
I would like to announce that I am not in the portal right now.
Is anybody here in the portal?
Yeah. there should be a rivals portal. We could just decide that we're transferring out of the rivals network. But we just want to still keep working for you and see what's around and what's available.
That would suck if somebody was like... Portal. In the media portal, Jason Sukumel has his name in the portal. And it's like, what? Why did I have to find out from the portal? Let's start out with the discussion. Obviously, it's the news of the day. Fantastic work by Anwar Richardson yesterday and last night in being the first to report the news that, I guess, first of all, there's two pieces of the puzzle. Like three, but two specifically reported on last night. Cameron Rising, we knew his name was in the portal. Anwar reporting yesterday that Cameron Rising has officially notified Texas that he's going to depart. We know he's looking at Utah, among other schools. And at the same time, Shane Bouchel, as of today, his name is now officially in the portal. Anwar reporting yesterday that that was expected to happen over the course of the next couple of days. We wait for Casey Thompson, and contrary to other media reports in the Austin area, nothing official yet with Casey Thompson. I think we all think it's a safe bet that he would return because his position on the depth chart is so much clearer than it would have been when he made the decision to put his name in the portal in the first place. Let's just go around the room, our impressions of what this is. Anwar, we'll start with you. Take control of the mic and kind of weave and bob our way through what you know and what you're expecting at this point.
Well, let's just start with the obvious, right? Which is Sam Ellinger has pretty much run every quarterback out of Texas at this point. Like Sam Ellinger has played so good and so well, you know, made some phone calls yesterday, Ketch, and I'm going to have some of this in the war room on Thursday night. I think some of these guys, especially the freshmen, saw Sam Ellinger play as a freshman and thought to themselves, hey, you know what? I can take that guy. I could beat that guy. I could beat that guy out. But what they did not see and what they did not anticipate was Sam Ellinger doing what he did as a sophomore. And that kind of season, which no need to really rehash it, but you go 10 games, don't throw an interception. I think all of a sudden the guys start wondering, well, where the hell am I on this depth chart? And so, you know, that's why you see the freshmen going in the portal. Clearly Cameron Rising, you guys know the dangers when you take guys from out of state. What often happens, you know, especially if things don't happen the way they thought it was going to happen. Some guys get homesick. They just want to head back towards where they're at. So that happens. Then you have the Shane Bouchel thing. And the Shane Bouchel thing is really, it's really interesting, you know, in that conversation because, you know, Shane Bouchel, from what I was told, Ketch, you know, clearly he sees the writing on the wall. Clearly he understands that this is Sam's team. He's not going to play here. And so he, you know, he had some conversations yesterday and he told them, hey, I want to finish out my time here at Texas. And he's even, you know, I don't know if I'm privy to say this, but, you know, Shane was really even willing to pay his own dime. And, you know, from the people I talked to, you know, who were in, you know, Bouchel's camp who know him well, he was willing to pay his own dime to finish at Texas. And he was told that he does have that to worry about, his financial aid and nothing would be taken away. So Shane gets to finish out. Now, it'll be interesting because I don't know if they allow Shane to participate with the team in the spring. You know, it'd be kind of a weird situation to let a guy practice with you knowing that he is going to leave. So I still got to get some clarity as far as to, I say spring yet, but the first meeting is on Monday. So I got to get a little bit more clarity as to what his involvement is going to be with the team. But, you know, he's a guy that now he's on his way out. And now, obviously, Tom Herman is going to be left when the spring is over as it stands with Sam Ehlinger. We'll see who his backup is. We're going to assume that Casey Thompson is coming back. And then Roschon Johnson, the incoming freshman.
All these guys thought that Sam was a mark. And I wonder, there had to be such a mixed batch of emotions as Texas started to play well this season. It's amazing that these kids showed up, didn't play as freshmen, and now they're bailing. Jason, I don't mean to interrupt you and Alex and Dustin here, but one of the stories in all of this, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, I think you've got to start recruiting two quarterbacks a year. Like, this is the new norm. At least that's what it would appear. And it works right now because you've got Sam as your starting quarterback. So that's rich people problems, right? Like, this is true first world problems to have a Heisman contender with 2 years of eligibility remaining as your quarterback. But two kids that just redshirted as freshmen watched him take the job and run with it. And now they're, you know, one has left. The other one still hasn't made his decision, although we think that he might come back. But it's a new age in quarterback recruiting across the country, and Texas has found that out firsthand. And I wonder if this ends up being a true rich program's problem, because, you know, we're seeing a lot of Oklahoma and Texas and Florida and all of these, you know, we're seeing a lot of big-time schools, but I don't know that we've seen a lot of Baylors and I don't know. It just seems like this is a big program problem right now. And I wonder how Texas adjusts to this accordingly moving forward.
Well, it's a new era, like you said, and I think it sucks. I hate everything about it. I understand Shane Buechele transferring, and, you know, to me, I get it. It makes sense. He's an upperclassman. He's got a younger guy in front of him. But when you have freshmen transferring after 1 year because they didn't beat out a guy who's a couple years ahead of them, I don't know. I wish they'd tweak this rule somehow. I just think it's a terrible rule. I mean, it is free agency in college football. And, you know, man, I don't want to bash on Cam Rising and Casey Thompson, but to me, that doesn't speak volumes about a young man when he's not willing to kind of stick it out a little bit and fight. I mean, hell, those guys could still have 2-3 years to run the program and accomplish everything they've ever wanted. So to bail, to cut ties this early, I'm just not a fan of. Now, listen, if Cameron Rising is just genuinely homesick and unhappy in Austin, that's one thing. But if it comes down to playing time and he wasn't able to push Sam Ehlinger the way he thought, I just hate the rule overall. But, you know, to answer your point, yeah, it is. It's kind of just uncharted territory. And, you know, I think coaches and everybody else, and certainly us media members and fans, we're just kind of going with the flow and learning on the fly. But it makes it imperative. You got to wonder now. It's too late at this point. There's no way Texas is going to take a second quarterback in the 2019 class. But you certainly, I got to think, if the staff knew for sure that all this was going to happen, Roschon Johnson would not have been the only class they take in 2019. And now it makes it pretty much imperative that they take two quarterbacks in 2020. They got one committed already. They got some irons in the fire on a couple other guys. So, but it almost makes it imperative. But you know, you're going to take two in 2020. And you're just going to have to assume probably a year after those guys are on campus, one of them's going to see the writing on the wall and probably want to transfer and not put up a fight. But it changes the dynamics overall. I'm just not a fan of it. I get it. It gives more power to the student athletes. You know, I'm all in favor of student athletes having a little bit more power, but to me, it also just opens up. It's just, man, it's just today's day and age, man. People don't want to fight for anything. I don't want to say they don't want to work for anything, but to throw in the towel after 1 year, for all these guys know, Sam Ehlinger has a great season and goes pro next year. And then Cameron Rising as a sophomore is potentially running the show for up to 3 years. But now he's going to cut ties and go to Utah. I've heard San Diego State mentioned and Arizona and I think maybe San Jose State would have been another one. You know, you're going to cut ties and go somewhere like that. What's going to happen if he goes to Utah and gets beat out? You know, then what? Do you transfer again? I mean, how many times can you do it? I don't remember.
Jason, Dustin, I don't understand.
Wow. Yes.
I don't understand Rising going, he's hustling backwards. San Diego State? Like, here's the thing. I feel like if he had
playing time, all comes down to playing time. I don't want to bash the kid because I like Cameron Risen. I liked him as a recruit, but it comes down to me as, dude, you couldn't cut it at Texas. You couldn't fight at Texas and get the job done. So you're going to go somewhere kind of a lesser program where it's an easier path to starting job. I just don't like it, man. I don't like it at all. I don't like that mindset.
This is becoming the reality with the quarterback position because these guys are looking up at some of the recent guys that have really thrived at the college level, and they're starting to see transfers do it. They're starting to see guys like Kyler Murray do it. They're starting to see guys like Baker Mayfield do it. They're starting to see Kelly Bryant take off for another school. Going back to – I think Nick Marshall was a transfer at one point. So it's starting a trend of guys are seeing more and more quarterbacks that they looked up to in the previous classes transferring and thinking, I've got to just go get my playing time. And it's – yeah, if you're a program like Texas now, you've got to sign two quarterbacks every single class, whether that's a high school guy, two high school guys, whether that's a high school guy and a transfer guy or something. You've got to start taking two every class because this is going to become the norm. And I'll be fascinated to see if guys like Tate Martell and Justin Fields get waivers, which apparently is a possibility based on the reporting out there, which I don't know how. I think that's a
slippery slope if they do get those waivers.
If they get those waivers, then you're sending another message to all these kids that, okay, maybe I won't even have to sit out a year. You know, maybe I can, you know, say, hey, I've got to get closer to home because so-and-so in my family or this and that. And these guys are all of a sudden granted waivers all the time. It's going to throw even more of a wrench into this entire process. So from Texas' perspective, they've got to recruit two guys every year. They just have to. And that's going to be a challenge in finding two really talented guys that want to be in a recruiting class. But you know what? A lot of these high school guys now might just look at it as, okay, this might just be my first school. You know, maybe I'll just go here and see how it is and you know, play my cards, and then after a year or two, look at my options, and then either bolt or stay there. And that's for these big programs that are recruiting those high caliber quarterbacks. Unfortunately, it sounds like this is going to become the norm. But yeah, from a guy like Rising's perspective, you know, Ehlinger, the style he plays, I think, you know, it's fair to say there's going to be a point next season where he's dinged up, whether that's for a game, whether that's for two quarters, whether that's for two games. I don't know, but there's probably going to be a point in time where he's got to stand from the sideline and watch. That's just the way it's been since his senior year in high school. And that's an opportunity for whoever's behind him to get in there and play, you know. And Jason, you mentioned the pro thing. While we don't think that's likely, but it's not impossible. And even if it's not, you're still looking at a situation where you're probably going to be multi-years in a college program as a starter at a place like Texas. I mean, that, remember when it used to be – you know, all these top programs would start guys that were like redshirt juniors. You know, that was the thing when during Florida State's run. Oh, we're going to bring this junior guy in there and he's going to start for 2 years. And then it's going to be the next junior. And now it's just you're going to have all these programs that are going to have guys that are looking to play as freshmen and sophomores. And if they're not playing, they're going to take off. And then if these guys begin to get waivers, it's going to create even more of a headache because these quarterbacks are going to be in such high demand. Then when they put their name in the portal, they're going to have all these programs blowing them up and say, hey, okay, we're looking to get you a waiver and see if we can get you immediately eligible. You come play for us and start right away.
Here's the other thing, too, and I know we're one Alex rant away from us having a really good time, but you can – these guys have the ability to hijack the program. You know that Roshan Johnson, all these guys who are incoming freshmen, when they step foot on campus, they go on Mondays, classes start on Tuesday – they can put their name in the portal, like on day one. So you can have a situation where coach has promised you that, hey, you're going to compete for playing time as a freshman. I guarantee that you're going to compete for playing time. And you can say, all right, coach, sounds good. Let's find out. And put your name in the portal on day one and say, show it to me. Or if you don't, I'm out. Like, that is where we're at as far as the transfer portal is concerned about the power these guys now have.
Is it? Let me play devil's advocate. Is this really a bad thing, or is this just so different than the way it's been done for such a long time that we have a natural like pushback against it? Like just the idea of players having any power in theory. I don't have a problem with that. Like, I don't have a problem with the unpaid workers. And I realize they get tuition and board and books and food and whatever. But this is a $1 billion industry. These are unpaid workers. And for the first time ever, they're leveraging a little bit of their leverage. And is it a terrible thing? Like, is this really a bad thing? Or are we old crotchety dudes who are like, oh, we used to walk to school uphill in the snow. These guys should stay for 3 or 4 years and battle it out. Like, I don't know. Like, I see both sides of this, but I don't know, like, who did Cameron Rising hurt? Well, he hurt Texas's depth. That sounds like a Tom Herman problem more than a Cameron Rising problem. I don't know that it's Cameron Rising or any other player's responsibility to think about the programs first. And, oh, man, I'm leaving Coach out in a lurch. I mean, I don't know. Like, are we going to – and here's the other – and Alex, I want to throw this to you, that just your gut instinct. Today, this is a quarterback problem. How long before this is the norm at all positions? Because I'll give you a perfect example. Texas is recruiting a bunch of fantastic DBs in this class, in the 2020 class, or the 2019 class, excuse me. Let's say one of these guys shows up and realizes, oh, God, like Caden Stearns and B.J. Foster.
DeMarvion Overshown.
Anthony Cook. Like, they've got it all on lockdown, and I showed up, and I put in my time, but I realized I probably should have made a different decision, and maybe it's better for me to look elsewhere. How long before we start seeing more of that and being less focused on the one position, which is what it seems to be right now?
Well, I mean, we're going to see it more and more often. The Pandora's box has been opened. It's opened, and now it's just opened. We just need to see what happens. But yeah, it's gonna proliferate because it's just the natural order of things. I mean, think about and here's the thing. You said, are we just the crotchety old dudes who see it this way? And the answer to that is kind of yes. And also the answer to whether or not college coaches are crotchety old dudes is officially yes. Right? I mean, we can say that for sure. They don't like it. And there's a part of me that doesn't like it either, because I love college athletics. I love the pageantry of it. I love the, you know, it's like I went to the University of Texas, right? I understand what it is like to be in those stands as a student, to have that connection with the football program that you simply don't have as a fan of a pro football team. As a fan of a pro football team, players come, they go. It's all business. Like, none of it really that tribalness I always found it a little bit more hard to understand, people being just diehard fans of an NFL football team, because you don't have anything in common with those people. You're not in it together. You're not from the same, you're not literally coming from the same place like you are in college. So I think that in college, the amateurism of it and the just the way that the fandom, the nature that the fandom arises from, to me seems more pure and more natural. Right. And so part of me says, like, I think this whole transfer portal thing sucks because not only that, but also because I'm seeing these messages you guys are sending in Slack. It's getting me all off the topic here.
Do not read any of them, Alex. thank you, Anwar.
But back to where I was saying, I guess with these coaches, right? These coaches, I feel like I'm on board with them. It's like, what are we really teaching these guys? What are we really teaching them? We're not teaching them anymore that you got to come somewhere. You have to work hard. You have to stick to something. You have to be, you know, a man of your commitment, a man of your morals. And whenever you see something through, you work your ass off. You commit yourself to a common goal as a team, you know, with your teammates. At that point in time, that's how success is going to come. Success follows hard work. These are lessons that we should be teaching our young men in life. And what we're doing via things like the transfer portal is we're kind of telling them, look, there's an you can take an easy way out. When the going gets tough, you can quit, blah, blah, blah. Right? That's what college coaches say. I sort of feel a little bit the same way. But then I think to myself, all these college coaches do is lie. They don't they walk the walk. They don't talk, or they talk the talk, but they don't necessarily walk the walk. They make commitments to these kids before everything ever starts. So it's like it's like a dog chasing its tail. It's like if the college coaches are going to lie about the fact and be disingenuous about the fact that these kids aren't being taught the important values that used to be taught back in the good old days of football, it's like eventually those coaches need to look at themselves in the mirror and say, I'm not necessarily, this isn't necessarily what, it's supposed to be what I'm teaching, but this isn't the way that I'm living and the way that I communicate with these kids during recruiting as we get to the point to where where I'm running my program and how I'm running my program and the commitments that I keep to these players, the promises that I make to them, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, this thing's going to keep happening because honestly, it is fair. Do I like it? No, because I feel like, to me, it feels like, college football and the kind of the innocence and the amateurism of it is being chipped away a little bit.
But isn't that gone? I mean, this idea of amateurism, like, that's just
that's what I'm saying. But this is just another thing. It's just another thing.
To justify not paying them.
I understand. But this is just another thing. And that's what I'm saying. I feel like it's fair.
Did Texas just get Trey Watson and Calvin Anderson? Like, what's good for the Goose is good for the Gander.
Senior graduate transfers. That's
those guys are graduate
transfers. Oh, now we're drawing a line.
What do you mean, Catch? It's like, no. What I just talked about was about lessons that you're supposed to be taught. You're supposed to see something. You're supposed to commit to something. You're supposed to see that goddamn thing through. Like, that's something that I'll go to my grave telling my kids to do. It's something that my dad went to his grave telling his kids to do. You commit to something. You work your ass off. You see it through. And hard work pays off. Right. So if people are quitting as freshmen and sophomores, they're making ill-advised decisions, foolhardy decisions. That's a little bit different than from a guy committing to go to university, committing to play for that university, graduating from that university, seeing his commitment through and then going elsewhere.
And they just wanted bigger. They had bigger opportunities. They wanted a bigger stage for their last year. I don't begrudge that at all. I mean, a senior wanting to transfer. I just think a freshman.
We're creating loopholes where it's kind of okay for the older guys. And then, Alex, I'm going to use – and again, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but it's kind of cockamamie to me. There we go. We should be teaching them commitment and to stick it out and – that's bullshit. Like, that's not what this is about. Like, that's not the job. Like, when that sounds like the kind of thing Dabo Swinney would say when asked, why don't you guys pay the players? Well, we give them a lot of things. They get to live under dorm rooms.
Has the best program and the best culture in all of college football.
But, like, the job, that's not what, like, nobody else goes to college to have their professors teach them about sticking it out. And learning how to be a commitment. No, this is the kind of thing that's reserved for students. We use this against student athletes to lock them down. And the truth of the matter is, I think we all look at this through the prism of the old way and the way we know it. And it reminds me of when free agency hit the NFL, because I remember, the reason I remember this so well is because the Cowboys were winning Super Bowls at the time. And the NFL went from having Plan B free agency to in the middle of the Cowboys dynasty, right in the middle of it, they had full-on free agency hit. We saw Reggie White go from the Eagles to the Packers. And we saw, I remember being a Cowboys fan, and when Ken Norton Jr. left the Cowboys to go to the 49ers, there was all of this talk from people who were like, this is going to ruin it for me. Because where's the loyalty? Where's the idea that you go to a team and you stick with it and you lead them to the playoffs and you lead it to the Super Bowl? And at the end of the day, the only job these kids have, look out for themselves. It ain't their job to look out for Tom Herman. It's not their job to look out for the guy that the position coach that recruited them. Because when Manny Diaz took the job and left after 3 minutes to take the Miami job, there's nothing in place to keep him from doing that. And every single kid that signed with Temple heard this speech. Loyalty. Commitment. I'm going to teach you lessons in life. And then Manny Diaz bailed. And he's not the first to do it. and he won't be the last. And as soon as the second signing day in February hits, we're going to see assistant coaches from across the country pick up, take jobs, go somewhere else, all under the veil of, well, we lied to the kids. And it just, it feels like the type of thing that we suggest should be in place for the students. And I don't feel like it's in place across the board in the sport. And there's just a, like, and I get it, because I don't know that it's right for the, I don't know that this is good for the sport. I don't think fans like it. But, and I think Cameron Rising's making a mistake. But, man, it's his right to make a mistake. And if he wants to go play football at San Diego State or Utah, like, that's his God-given right to just be, make a bad mistake. That is part of growing up as well, is making mistakes and learning from them. I don't know. This feels like it feels like in general, there's an uproar over this thing happening, but I feel like it's for selfish reasons. I feel like it's fan bases who are upset that their backup quarterback position isn't as solidified as it once was. I don't know that that's a good enough reason to keep kids from being able to make moves if they think that benefits them.
Well, Ketch, just, I feel like that you're arguing against it. You're arguing against a point that I wasn't making. Like I said, that this, the transfer portal is technically, we're taking a step towards things being more fair. It's more fair. Now, I think that the matter of whether you like it or not, I don't think it's cockamamie to say that you don't like it, because it doesn't teach the lessons that you think are important that should be taught in young men and,
but who's,
young,
who,
and young women.
Who is defining that that's what needs to be taught to these young men? They've got.
I'm saying that that's my personal opinion. And it's a very, and to me, that's something that I hold very dear in my life. It's something that's like a guiding principle in my life, is when you commit to something, you stick by it and you see it through and you work your ass off and through that. Through that hard work, good is going to come out of it. I was brought up with faith in my heart that that was going to be the case, and that was what was going to happen. And so I feel like if that's a message that you could teach to younger people, then that's a message that we should be teaching to younger people. With that being said, I understand that coaches in 95% of these cases are completely disingenuous with the fact that they are telling these kids that, and they go around and do something completely different, right? So what I'm saying is I think it's fair. But I'm also saying I don't. There's something deeply ingrained in me that doesn't like it. That's all I'm saying.
Anwar, what's really interesting about all this is Tom Herman did his best to keep this from bubbling. Like if you think about the way he handled last season, I think he always had it in the back of his mind that he needed to handle the Cameron Rising, Casey Thompson thing carefully, because he didn't want to get into a situation where I think one of those guys played in a game at the expense of the other. And then, so let's say he plays Cameron Rising in two games last year because they've got four to play. You know, I think he wanted those guys to think to themselves, competition right now doesn't even matter. You just learn. And if you're taking reps with the twos or you're taking reps with the scout team, it's not really even going to matter for a couple of years. So don't get too focused on where you're at on the depth chart now. I felt like he did everything he could at the quarterback position to kind of control the narrative so that these guys wouldn't freak out. And they freaked out anyway.
Well, it happened, but you know, there was two things. It's a combination of two things, Ketch. Like first and foremost is, when was there really an opportunity to play these guys in a blowout game? You start there. They didn't have any. Every game that Texas played in was close, including the games that you thought would not be close. So you have that. The second thing is you had two games where Sam Ehlinger didn't play due to injury, and say, you know, Shane went in. Well, if you're Tom Herman and you're in year two, it's not about, hey, well, I'm just going to throw some guys in there to make them feel good. Like Tom Herman was trying to win last year. I mean, he came off a 7-6 season, 6-6 in a regular season. Tom Herman wanted to win, and he felt like Shane gave him the best chance to win. So he put Shane out, out there, and he knew what he had. And, you know, at that time, those freshmen weren't ready. So, you know, by the time you get to the bowl game, these guys are like, well, I'm done. I've seen enough. It is what it is. And it might be a situation where, hey, me being the backup to Sam is one thing. Me having to be the backup to Shane is something totally different. You know, I've talked to people in there, and they feel in the building. That's always my term, right? In the building, or associated with the program. Those are my two go-tos. And but both, you know, that's some of the consensus is those guys felt like, hey, why do I have to back up Shane? Not willing to, you know, to wait on it. And so now, you know, I raised this, I think, back in a podcast in December, and I don't believe in anything as coincidences. I don't believe that these guys just so accidentally went into the transfer portal right at the same time. Like, that didn't happen. Those guys had some conversations behind the scenes and said, you know what, dude, let's just find out who they want. Come on, dude, we'll do it together, and let's just figure it out. Like, they banded together. And then, you know, decided to make a move. And, you know, now we'll just got to play it out and see, you know, what's going to happen. Because really, at this point, it's not even about Rising. It's just about Thompson and keeping Thompson, you know, in the fold. And that just becomes, in a weird way, you have to re-recruit the guys that you've already recruited. But you have to go back to, you know, calling the parents again and calling the kid again and checking up on the kids and saying, hey, how's it going? And making sure that they still want to be a part of the program, because, you know, all season workouts start on Monday. And the worst case scenario, it clearly would be if Casey Thompson says, yeah, you know what? I'd be the number two here, but, you know, I could be the number one somewhere else. And I got a chance to compete for the number one spot. So I'm good. And then Tom Herman's down to two quarterbacks in the season. Because I can tell you, I can't think of anyone in the building that wants a scenario where they have Roschon Johnson as the backup quarterback. And it's not to say he's not good. It's not to say he's not talented. It's just when you think about a true freshman, you've done this for years. You know, high school standouts is one thing. Doing it on a college level is something totally different. You know, not having Shane is going to be tough. You know, not having the other guys, but now it's just going to be interesting to see how they try to develop some of these backups, because they got to give them reps, because we know how Sam Ehlinger plays, right? We know that this wild style of football will lead to an injury, and they're going to have to put somebody in at some point. They just got to hope that Casey Thompson decides he's going to come back.
So, Jason, let me ask you this. Is it really too late for Texas to go out and add a second quarterback in this class? I mean, I go back to, God, class of 2007. Was that the John Brantley class with G.J. Kinney? And at the very end, Texas needed a quarterback, and they went after G.J. Kinney, who at the time was committed to Baylor, and clearly G.J. Kinney. By the way, Rod Babers had a stat that I saw earlier today on Twitter that I can't remember when it started, but Texas – of the last 20 quarterbacks that Texas has taken in recruiting, only three of it, not including the guys that are still on campus, that being Ehlinger and Casey Thompson, that only three have actually seen out all of their eligibility. That, you know, they've either transferred, or I guess in the case of a guy like David Ash, had to retire. But, you know, we are now at an age at the University of Texas where basically 85% don't like that number necessarily, but 85% of the quarterbacks that Texas has taken in the last decade plus have all left for reasons unrelated to graduation and finishing out eligibility. I don't think it's too late. If Texas really wanted it, because my fear, if I'm Texas, is that Roschon Johnson comes in and sees that Casey Thompson is clearly ahead of him. And so I don't think Roschon Johnson is going to do this. He doesn't seem, he's saying all the right things now, but they all do. What if he comes in a year from now and says, oh man, this is different than what I thought. I'm third string. I'm going to be third string until 2021. So yeah, I need to find another thing. And then you're in a position where you only have two quarterbacks. I realize it's unplanned, but I think they need to think long and hard about adding a second quarterback to this class to protect their backs.
I just don't see it being realistic. Today's day and age, I mean, it's different now. You mentioned, first off, how the hell you can pull those years just out of your head with the John Brantley. I couldn't guess within 2 or 3 years when that John Brantley stuff
happened. How is he not on the list for guys who were most talked about but didn't come here? His dad's word was like solid as oak or something like that.
I think he was, if he didn't make my top 10, he was number 11.
I was going to say, he was one we certainly discussed behind the scenes when we were talking about that. But I'm just amazed, Ketch, at how you can pull those years. I'd have to literally go back and look to even be able to wager a guess on the years. I don't know how you do that, but
don't know that I got that right.
Well, none of us were smart enough to question you. I guess that's the point. But nowadays most of these guys are signed early, so the pool is much more limited. I mean, as we record it, we are a little less than 3 weeks until National Signing Day 2. I mean, Texas only offered one other quarterback, ironically, who was Spencer Rattler, who, of course, is signed with Oklahoma. They had a guy like Peyton Powell they were kind of flirting with, you could come in as a quarterback, but they kind of went their separate ways, and that was as much or more Texas is doing than it was Peyton Powell's. I don't know who you could find. I'm sure you could find a lower-level kid that would probably jump at the chance, but a Matthew Merrick type, but are those the kind of guys?
Oh man, a Matthew Merrick blast.
I don't mean that as an insult to Matthew Merrick by any means, but in talking to, kind of people associated with the program, they're not looking to take guys just to fill spots because they have the numbers. It's kind of like the running back situation with DeAndre Glass. They didn't push for DeAndre Glass just because, we need another running back. They're only taking guys they feel can legitimately help them win championships. I just don't see them scrambling around to find a second quarterback who, let's be honest, would be a marginal talent probably at this point. I just don't see that happening in the 2019 class. Now, 2020, they've got one committed in Hudson Card. There's a guy named Hunter Dunn who's going to be on campus this weekend. They're going to take two in 2020. And like Dustin said, that might be the MO every year from here on out, but I just think it's too late for 2019 to find a second quarter.
Well, the hard part could catch about 2019 is that any guy that you're going to bring in, he's going to want to start. So no one's going to want to come in and say, hey, I want to be a backup, a grad transfer. He's transferring because he wants to start, at another program, or we missed out on bringing in other guys. You're not going to get anything special out of JUCO, and these even JUCO guys are going to want to start. So that's the difficulty of trying to, grab someone right now. Even if it's a grad transfer, you would have to have a grad transfer who's saying, I'm good with sitting the bench, but more than likely they've sat the bench or they haven't had a lot of success at their previous program, and they want one last opportunity to start.
Hey, you know what? If you really want a second quarterback,
Jared Wiley.
Jared Wiley. This is a guy who played quarterback at Temple, did exceptionally well to the point his high school coaches said, dude, we think you could be a college quarterback for somebody if you wanted to. He's that talented. He's a 6'6", big athlete, can run. He's got a big arm, really studies the playbook. I mean, did really well this year, but I just think that guy's destined for tight end. But you know what? If you're really in a pinch, that could be a guy that could help you out in certain situations.
Hey, changing the conversation slightly, and I thought yesterday, boy, a lot happened yesterday, because I thought today's podcast would center a lot on the decision that Jalen Hurts made. And we're, 40 minutes into the conversation. His name hasn't come up, but Oklahoma is in a weird position because they've been blocking one kid, accepting another. And it kind of goes back to my point about how the schools are only in this thing for themselves. And so maybe I shouldn't be mad at the players doing the same thing. But Jalen Hurts is the new quarterback at Oklahoma going into this season. I'd love to go. And I want to start with Dustin. Dustin, and then Alex, you go second, and we'll just go around the room. Thoughts on what Jalen Hurts' addition to Oklahoma means for the Big 12 and for Oklahoma and for Texas going into the 2019 season?
I think it makes Oklahoma the Big 12 favorite again. I mean, I don't know how much that would have changed given their track record of Lincoln Riley recently if Hurts didn't go to Oklahoma, but it would have created a bit more of a question mark at the quarterback position. But it again makes them the favorite to win the conference. I mean, I'm going to have to pipe down my Jalen Hurts homerism on Orange Bloods, but I've loved this dude since we saw him as a sophomore in high school at the Houston Rivals camp when he won MVP, quarterback MVP there. And you know, he's it's just weird, the reaction on Twitter with, you know, him transferring. Everybody's, oh, he's not in the same galaxy as Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield and all these guys. Okay, like, yeah, he has his issues, but he's also got like 7,500 total yards, 71 total touchdowns, multiple conference titles, and multiple national title game appearances. Like, he arrives at Oklahoma with a lot of winning pedigree. So they're going to have to, stylistically, I think they're going to look different next year, because he's not going to be able to sit in the pocket and do some of the things that Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield did on a consistent basis. But this is a guy that brings a lot of winning intangibles, a lot of experience, a lot of production. And I think that, you know, at this point, you got to say Lincoln Riley's probably going to get the most out of a guy like that. And I think it makes him, you know, again, the favorite to win the league, with Texas being a close second.
I mean, for me, I just, you know, Max Olson tweeted out a stat yesterday, our friend Max Olson, the writer for The Athletic, about, you know, Lincoln, about the four top, or like the five top efficiency years, like, ever for college quarterbacks. And like, one was Tua Tagovailoa. Then it was like, there was one that was Kyler Murray, and then three that were Baker Mayfield, right? And it just said, where is Cliff King, or where is Lincoln Riley going to put Jalen Hurts on this list after the 2019 season? I scroll back, he's not going anywhere on that damn list. Like, I don't care who the coach is, I don't care what the system is, Jalen Hurts is not as good as those guys. And Dustin might love him for seeing him at camps. I've seen him at camps going back to the time he was in high school. I know his dad, Coach Hurts. Like, I don't see why why there was such a big kerfuffle over this yesterday, except for the fact that, you know, Oklahoma's really good, and Oklahoma might play Alabama in the national championship again next year if they come back and field a team that was anything like it was this year, which I'm not sure about when you lose four of your five, you know, offensive linemen that won the best offensive line in the nation, and also losing a guy like Kyler Murray, also losing Hollywood. I guess you keep CeeDee Lamb, but there's a whole lot that they're losing as far as that Oklahoma football team. And Dustin, you said it makes them the favorite to win the Big 12. Weren't they kind of the favorite anyway?
Well, yeah, that's what I said, is they probably would have been anyway, but right. This removes a lot of the doubt at the quarterback position. And, you know, I know it's an extremely small sample size, but when Alabama changed their offense last year, you know, Jalen Hurts' efficiency rating was basically the same as Kyler Murray. Granted, it's an extremely small sample, but, you know, I think some of his efficiency ratings and some of his issues at Alabama prior to that, they were basically, let's limit the turnovers, put it on the ground type of offense, kind of similar to what Texas was last season. So, and not to derail your thought there, but I just found that interesting.
No, I get it. And I think that, yeah, it's probably going to be something a little bit like we saw from Texas, right? I mean, what thing we know about Jalen, he's big, he's physical, he's not scared to run. You can run him between the tackles. We're going to see more of a quarterback run element from Oklahoma. That's going to help their offense. They're going to have to reinvent themselves a little bit, which, I mean, say what you want about Jalen Hurts. He's not as accurate as Kyler, or as certainly not as Baker Mayfield. I think that he's like a 60-61% accuracy percentage kind of guy, right?
Where he was basically 73% though this season. And I realize the numbers are somewhat limited, but
yeah, I mean, what 80 passes or something last year? So, but I don't know, man. I think that,
hey, Alex, pop quiz. Yeah. What was Sam Ehlinger's passing efficiency? This, we all agree Sam Ehlinger just had a really good season, right? Right. Sam Ehlinger, 25 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, had a 146.8 passing efficiency. Jalen Hurts in his career has a 148.8, and he's gone from 139 to 150. He was 196.7 this year on unlimited sample size. Being, but, you know, 70 attempts isn't a tiny sample size. 10.9 yards per attempt. Like, Jalen Hurts is good, period. And he's not downgrading. He's going to Oklahoma, and they've got receiver talent that's at least as good as Alabama's, and he's got better offensive coaching. And This is a guy that's played in every – he's played in bigger games than Kyler Murray's played in. This is the guy that was the SEC Player of the Year as a freshman and then last year lost his job in the national championship game after he went 17 touchdowns and one interception all year. Like, I think Jalen Hurts under Lincoln Riley – I think it was a perfect choice for Jalen Hurts. If your goal is to develop the aspect of your game that people think needs the most work, then go to the guy that is the number one quarterback guru in the world right now. Like, what essentially that stat that you provided for Max Olsen earlier, what it really says is that Lincoln Riley's basically developed the five best quarterback seasons in the history of the sport, not including Tua, who, you know, was right up there as well until the very end. Oklahoma went from probably having a team capable of competing for a Big 12. I had Texas as the clear favorite in the Big 12 until yesterday. I don't know that I think it's kind of even now. But Oklahoma onward just went from a situation where they might have had to have started a true freshman quarterback on a team that's otherwise capable of competing for a playoff spot in a Big 12 championship. And now instead of hoping with a true freshman, they're handing the ball to a guy that has played on the biggest stages, has won monster games, and has had enough success that he's going to have a lot of confidence that he can come into a Big 12 where he's not going to see the level of defenses that he sees in the SEC, at least on paper. You know, I mean, who knows what to – SEC defenses might be good because they don't play Big 12 offenses. But he's coming to a league that – favors quarterbacks and big-time offenses, and I think this at least makes Oklahoma even with Texas, and it makes that game in Dallas next year. That one's going to be a fun one because both of those teams are going to be locked and loaded.
I know you want to throw it on war, but just before you do, I mean, I can completely understand all your points there except for the thing about the wide receivers. That's just not true. The wide receivers in Alabama are better.
Doesn't Oklahoma have like a bunch of five stars coming in?
Oklahoma literally has 3 5-star receivers in this class alone. If you go back to their class from a couple of years ago, their young receiving talent is on par with Texas's young receiving talent. And Texas's young receiving talent in the last 2 years is as good as anything that Alabama's been recruiting. Now, Alabama's roster as a whole is stacked. And I'm not saying Alabama doesn't have 5-star receivers, but if you look at Oklahoma's receiver talent, they don't take a backseat to anybody.
I don't think it's a given to say that he's getting an upgrade in wide receiver talent.
I mean, I didn't say an upgrade. I said that he's working with the same level of high level talent that he was working with at Alabama. I can read you the names of Oklahoma receivers coming back from this past season that will be very high NFL draft picks when it's their time to be selected.
We'll see. It seems like those Alabama guys get drafted a lot higher than those Oklahoma guys. But we'll see.
Oklahoma hasn't been landing 5-star receivers until very recently. Lincoln Riley showed up, and their level of skill position recruiting has changed on a dime. Whereas they used to be getting the national 250 guys for the last few years, they've been getting just monsters at the wide receiver position, and they just stacked on top of them this past season. I mean, they've got CeeDee Lamb coming back next year. They've got Charleston Rambo is a guy that, I mean, just waiting.
I just don't put Charleston Rambo in the same class as a Jalen Waddle or a Jerry Judy.
I think you could put
CeeDee
Lamb on that level.
I mean, I certainly have a lot more respect for CeeDee Lamb than I do for Charleston Rambo.
Yeah. Right. Because CeeDee Lamb had 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns last year.
And I thought he was just a much better prospect, period.
Because he's a five-star.
He's a better receiver.
Right. Because he's a five-star. And now they're going to have, I think, 5 5-star receivers on their roster. I don't know that Alabama has 5 5-star receivers on their roster. They might. Alabama.
Ruggs, at least, just off the top of my head. But, I mean, they have good players there.
Making is that the talent level's comparable. There's going to be a lot of Texas fans that are like, Jalen Hurts isn't any good. He was just surrounded by good players. And my point is, he's still going to be surrounded by good players, really good players. And he's got better offensive coaching now. Like, there's just no getting around the fact that everything that Lincoln Riley touches right now at the quarterback position has turned to gold.
Well, you can't argue that. No one's arguing that.
And, the thing that makes it so compelling is that when you look at the Big 12, Ketch, I mean, the only team that you're looking at that can stand in Oklahoma's way is Texas.
Yeah.
I know there's SEC bias. I get that, right? But Oklahoma isn't looking like at many teams on their schedule and saying, oh God, how do we get past this team? The only team that they'll look at their schedule and maybe even objectively and say, okay, we got Texas. We know that's a tough game. That's going to be the Red River. We know Sam Ellinger is really good. He's getting better. And that's it. And so outside of that, Jalen Hurts, I mean, remember Kez, when we were doing these podcasts and we were talking about Kyler Murray and all the teams that they were playing with the first few weeks. And we're like, man, like he's playing Army and he's playing all these like whack teams. And you're like, man, we'll see what happens. And then all of a sudden, and really for a good half or so, and maybe even three quarters, Texas did a really good job of containing Kyler and really rattling him. And then all of a sudden, Kyler just went Kyler in the fourth quarter, and he continued to be Kyler after that. So I think that's why it's easy to say, okay, Jalen is not as good as Murray, but with their schedule coupled with the conference and just coupled with his skill set, I mean, he's good enough to be a good quarterback. Now, I would like to see a debate if he's better than Spencer Rattler at the end of the day, and I would love to engage in that. But outside of that, I mean, he's good enough to get the job done. I would say that.
Interesting thing about that game, the Texas OU game next year, is Hurts and Ellinger have a lot of similarities. A lot of similarities when you look at them in terms of the intangibles, the physicality they bring to the position, the dual threat nature. I think if people wanted to poke holes in an area of Ellinger's game, it'd maybe be the downfield accuracy, which is probably the same thing you could look at with Jalen Hurts. So that game, I mean, I'm already looking forward to it with those two guys leading their respective teams, because they represent so much of the same things. And both of those guys are going to be two of the better quarterbacks in the country next year.
You know, it's interesting, Kez, guys, just jump in real quick to say something 1 minute. You guys, I forget what the event was, but when I first got here, they had some sort of event for underclassmen, and those guys were out there throwing. It was at the stadium, right? And I remember seeing this quarterback, and I just thought, oh, my God, like, this guy is really freaking good. And I went up to him. I was like, young man, like, what is your name? And he told me his name was Jalen Hurts. I was like, man, I said, you look like you're one of the best quarterbacks that are out here, man. And I was like, is Texas recruiting? This is back in Charlie Strong. It's like, yeah, not so much. And I guess at that point, like in Charlie's mind, he thought there were other quarterbacks, including Shane, that was better than Hurts. And I just always look back and I think back to that. And I was like, man, what the hell were those guys thinking?
Yeah, they did. They recruited him a little bit, but they never, like you said, Omar, they never really pushed for him. They had other guys higher on their board. That must have been the back then it was the Under the Lights camp.
Now I think it was. It was like one of my first events. I just want to go out and check it out.
Mm-hmm.
I
remember.
I was so impressed, and I could not believe that the staff wasn't recruiting that guy.
Hey, Jason, I'm looking at the clock. Anything recruiting wise we need to get in before, you know, this has basically been a transfer podcast, but at the risk of not getting careful with my words here, at the risk of not getting everything in, anything you need to.
That's what she said.
Yes.
Weird time, man. You know, normally in the second week of January, we are ripping and roaring with the recruiting class. It's about to be signing in a few weeks, but it's been weirdly quiet, man. Coaches have been on the road, kind of checking on some guys who signed, and Herb Hand still talking to a couple grad transfer guys. And, you know, I've touched on that on the sites all week. And but it's been pretty quiet overall. And like I said on my podcast for the Yak, I said, hey, it's not really the calm before the storm, because I'm not really expecting a storm of 2019 activity between now and signing. There'll be a few guys that'll visit. Obviously, Javon Shepherd visited A&M last weekend. He's visiting Georgia, I think, this weekend, then Alabama, then Texas. He's going to decide, he says, on signing day, February 6th. So, listen, that guy could tell me the morning of February 6th, I'm coming to Texas. But until I see that his letter of intent has been sent in, I'm not considering anything official with Javon Shepherd. But the bigger thing to focus on is this weekend, they're having Texas having a lot of key 2020 targets come in. I literally just confirmed via text about 5 minutes ago. They're going to have Chad Lindbergh, the big offensive line targets coming in. Damon Demas, the borderline or maybe even likely five-star receiver commitment who's committed to Texas A&M. I posted last night he's coming in with a quarterback, Hunter Dunn, that Tim Beck saw this week and really liked, invited him up. Vernon Broughton, the top defensive line target for Texas, will be in this weekend. Zachary Evans was going to come, but now his brother has to work, so he's probably not coming. But there are going to be a couple other big offensive linemen coming in. Jalen Garth, Jacob
Somebody Major. Send an Uber for him, man. and pay that bill. Somebody should send an Uber.
Man,
and pay
that get bill Southwest for flight, man. Some Texas boosters got to have some Southwest points.
I really like Zach's brother, C.J. Robinson. He's a really good dude, man. He and I talked quite a bit, just DM on Twitter, and I was like, I wanted to joke with him and say, I mean, surely some Texas fan will take your shift for you. But I was like, I'm gonna leave that alone. But if he doesn't come this weekend, his brother said, hey, he might try to bring him up next weekend. But I tell you, a lot of those guys, man, Vernon Broughton, Jalen Garth, Jake Majors, two offensive linemen and defensive end. I got a sneaky suspicion all three of those guys are going to be parts of the 2020 Texas class. I think a couple of those could happen sooner rather than later. So potentially a big weekend for Texas. It's weirdly quiet on 2019, but things are starting to ramp up on 2020, and I'm starting to shift a lot of my focus to 2020 guys, and I'll have some more updates on those guys in the war room tonight. So lots going on. As always, man, there's never a downtime in recruiting, so just stay glued to the boards this weekend. Everybody could be a fun weekend, have a lot of guys on campus.
Is that it for you, Jason?
I think that's it, man. I've got to go do an old man doctor's checkup, so I got to get out of here. So I'll let y'all
cough twice. Turn your head to the left and cough twice.
I'm hoping I don't go that far. But you guys have enjoy the rest of the podcast, and I will see everybody online after lunchtime sometime.
So, fellas, just to put a ribbon and bow on, and Dustin, I'm not going to ask you about basketball today, but I might ask you about scooters. Anything left on this transfer thing that we need to here, I want to ask everybody this question, because there's an article that just got posted on The Ringer. I just saw the tweet, and it was, can Lincoln Riley turn Jalen Hurts into a Heisman candidate? I think the answer is yes, but the question I want to ask everybody is, who's first team all Big 12 next season at quarterback, Hurts or Sam?
Ooh, that's tough.
I mean, if there were a bet on it in Vegas, they would both. I guarantee you that you both. Whenever those odds come out, they're both going to be like plus 120. You know, they're going to be even money. I think it's sixes, man. And I guess I would go with Sam Ehlinger, just because he's been in the conference, you know, for one season longer. The voters are a little they're just as familiar with it. I don't know. I think it's a complete toss-up, Catch.
Who ends up being higher in Heisman voting next year, Sam or Jalen Hurts?
You know, only because of the hype around Oklahoma at this point, would I probably point to Jalen. I mean, Jalen's transfer was national news. That was a national talking point. So
I think that's fair enough. I think that's kind of fair.
So I'm just talking about based on hype, and I'm looking at their schedule. You know, they opened up with they're playing Houston, then they'll do South Dakota. They're at UCLA. They're off. Then they play Texas Tech. They play Kansas, and then they play Texas. So by in that stretch of games, those five games, I mean, he's going to be looking good, putting up some great numbers at that point. By the time he plays Texas, you know, he can have his one bowl again and then, you know, finish off against the West Virginias and Kansas State, Iowa State in the world. So I don't know if he finishes as strong when it's all said and done. But just based on hype alone, not productivity, hype alone, I would probably say Hurts today.
Huh.
The thing Sam has, though, is he's got a chance early on to grab – a lot of eyeballs as it relates to that stuff when LSU comes to town. I mean, that one is going to be – that's probably going to be a top 10 LSU team, a top 10 Texas team. Hell, it might even be a top 5 LSU team, depending on the way some things shake out. I was just looking at Oklahoma's schedule, like you mentioned, on where the – I mean, they don't really have – Texas is their signature game. Like, that's it. they open with Houston. Okay. South Dakota, at UCLA, they were horrible last year. You know, Tech at home. Like, their road games are at Kansas State. Like, for winning football games, it sets up perfectly for a quarterback to potentially go undefeated through the regular season. But they don't really have any signature games besides Texas. And we know that anything can really happen – in the Cotton Bowl, when those two teams get together, especially when they both believe they're the best team on the field. So I think Sam has a real opportunity early on with that LSU game to make a national name for himself with a strong performance there. There's just not really anything on Oklahoma's schedule that just kind of is going to be a like, whatever. They're not going to have a primetime game all year, maybe. I mean, if you look at their schedule, like, what game would be primetime, you know? Not Tech, not UCLA, not Kansas State. I mean, not TCU. Like, maybe Oklahoma State on the road at the end of the year. But it's kind of a cakewalk schedule, which I know helps him in a lot of ways build stats. And you know, we know that quarterbacks to win a lot of games get a lot of love as it relates to the Heisman. But, yeah, just not many opportunities to really have signature moments on that schedule.
I wonder if at some point there would be backlash against an Oklahoma player because there's been so many of them, right? Like, their quarterbacks, if Jalen Hurts were to come out and have a monster season next year, I wonder if anybody starts to point towards it being a system thing, or do we just look at the fact that Baker Mayfield is really good already in the NFL? We don't know what's going to happen with Kyler Murray, but maybe that doesn't happen. It's just fascinating that I think, and Texas fans won't want to hear this, but maybe they will. I thought that Lincoln Riley was going to be a hot NFL name this year, and I thought he would take a job because I thought, good God, Cliff Kingsbury just got a job. So you can't tell me that Lincoln Riley wouldn't have gotten a job if he wanted a job, but he didn't want a job. He decided he wanted to stay at Oklahoma. It looks like they're working on an extension. But if he can turn Jalen Hurts into a guy whose passing numbers – are anywhere near what the previous quarterbacks have been, I could just tip my cap to Lincoln Riley at that point and say, dude, you're the best. No offense to anybody else, but if he can do it with Jalen Hurts, he will have done it with three straight different quarterbacks, all with different strengths and different weaknesses. And, like, I don't bet against him at this point because we all said this last year. Like, he's working with Kyler Murray, no longer has arguably the best quarterback in the history of college football, and Baker Mayfield. Now let's see what he does. And I think it's real easy to look at Kyler Murray and say that Kyler was the X factor and it was more Kyler than Lincoln Riley. But, man, you got to give that dude credit for what he's been able to do. And this is yet another challenge for him. And if he fulfills this one, I have to believe at some point the NFL is going to make him an offer that he won't be able to turn down. Because if Cliff Kingsbury's hot for what he's able to do with quarterback development and offensive game planning and things like that, they must think Lincoln Riley wrote the moon. And, you know, at some point on war, this hasn't really been talked about, but if Sam Ellinger has a big year, I wonder at some point if Tom Herman doesn't end up being a name because he's an offensive guy. And I think Tom Herman has done himself a disservice in terms of perception and delegating, wanting to delegate kind of his offense around, whereas Lincoln Riley's like, no, I'm the guy. And I think that, you know, you look at the year that Texas had on offense this year, I think Tom Herman would be getting a lot more love if Tom Herman was a lot more proactive and the buck stops with me and I'm the guy that's in charge of the offense, but he doesn't do that. And I wonder if that's – because Texas fans don't want to hear Tom Herman going to the NFL, and I'm not suggesting that, but we live in a world now where Cliff Kingsbury gets a head coaching job in the NFL, and I see guys better than Cliff Kingsbury in the Big 12 on a weekly basis – primarily in both Austin and Norman.
We live in a world, Ketch, where Matt Rhule turned down the Jets.
Yes!
Yeah. I mean,
you're right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the world that we're living in. You want to put that in perspective. Like, Matt Rhule at Baylor turned down the Jets. Like, what world are we talking about when we're talking about a Tom Herman guy, you know, person who, I mean, we're talking about 13-1 in his first year, the 9 wins the second year. He inherits what is a huge mess of a program, and he gets them to 7 wins in year one, gets them to 10 wins in a win against Georgia. The guy's winning in bowl games. He coaches well in big games, so you know that he can inherit a good program and make them great. You may know he can inherit a bad program and make them pretty good. They're not great yet. Yeah,
culture,
a losing culture, because the teams that are hiring now, and Alex can attest to this, like, teams that are hiring now are bad teams. They're bad teams that need someone to come in and turn them around. So, you know, and with high draft picks also. So he's a guy that it's interesting that his name doesn't come in. I know Texas fans will say, well, he's a college guy, and it's not about where he is at this moment and if Texas is his dream job or not. So we just talk about the opportunity or the invite or just poking in around to say, like, hey, would you be interested in such a thing? So it is a really real, really weird world. But if Matt Rhule is turning down college jobs, I don't know why Tom Herman has a guy to call.
General That's managers. All. He's going to get a general manager and head coaching job based on the fact it's wild. And it should be noted that early in Mack's tenure at Texas, he was getting occasional NFL sniffs because of the same thing that Anwar just mentioned, that he was highly successful. He had a reputation for culture and changing it and building a winning thing. We saw that Bob Stoops was constantly had his name in NFL coaching rumor circles for much of his career. It is interesting that Tom Herman hasn't yet had that happen, but I think that so goes the development of Sam Ellinger this year. So goes potentially just his name being mentioned the way we see other Big 12 coaches. I mean, in theory, there's only 10 teams in the league, and 30% of the coaches this year, not including Tom Herman, either received NFL job offers, turned them down, or decided that they just didn't want it. Because if Lincoln Riley wanted to be in the NFL right now, he absolutely would be. He made the decision not to. God, I'd love to sit down with him and pick his brain on that. Maybe there just wasn't a job. By the way, Alex, your thoughts on Adam Gase and that opening press conference with the Jets? I've watched that 100 times.
I can't believe. I mean, just googly eyed is just a way too. That's an understatement. He looked like he had just taken about 40 Adderall pills and cruised out there after slamming some coffee with it. I mean, I could not believe it. But then, you know, one of my friends, or I guess kind of acquaintances in the fantasy football space, Evan Silva, that works for Roto World. He did tweet out a bunch of stuff that were interviews with Adam Gase from when he was in Miami. And, you know, he just always pulls his hat down so far. But his eyes, if you look at it, man, his eyes are always a little bit googly like that when he's answering questions from reporters. I think the fact that, and here's the thing, I've addressed Adam Gase twice, actually. During his time in Miami, I actually busted his chops last year at the combine for saying that Kiko Alonso was not a liability in coverage, and I just said, Coach, how could you say that Kiko Alonso can cover tight ends? Like he can't. He's like, well, you know, you guys don't know what the coverages are, you know. And I was like, well, how do you explain for the fact that, you know, even places like Sports Info Solutions and Pro Football Focus have the grades, you know? So anyway, I've been eye to eye with the
guy. You got into a confrontation with him?
I just never. It wasn't anything like the one I got into with Bill O'Brien two years ago when I made the DeAndre Hopkins comment. But
I want to hear that story. You just farted in the room and walked out. No,
okay.
No.
Okay. Well, I just said, Coach, I was at the media availability, and it was after the 2016 season when DeAndre Hopkins had a down year. And I just said, Coach, what happened with DeAndre Hopkins last year? He looked at me like I had an asshole for a face. Like, he looked at me literally like he was shocked and repulsed at this, even the look of me. And he said, what do you mean what happened to DeAndre Hopkins last year? And I said, what happened to DeAndre Hopkins' productivity last year? And he goes, what do you mean his productivity? What did he catch, 100 balls, something like that? I go, Coach, he caught 69 balls for 900 and so something yards. That's down from, you know, whatever it was the year before, whatever. Like, I had all the stats right there out of the top of my head. And he just said, I can't believe that anybody would ask about DeAndre Hopkins whenever his, you know, whenever you see what was at the quarterback position and blah, blah, blah. Just like this moron, Bill O'Brien. I swear to God, there's not a coach that gets more credit for being a shitty head coach than Bill O'Brien. That's going to piss off half our board, I'm sure. Maybe we should probably edit that out. What has he really ever done besides, I mean, go into Deshaun Watson's rookie year after seeing him the whole time and wasting two games of the season? I don't know, man. I think that he should have been gone right along with Rick Smith whenever he left, and they should have cleaned house entirely. I guess he did make the playoffs this year and stuff. He's just such a cocky son of a bitch, dude. That guy is never wrong. He's always right. He treats media like shit.
Alex, I'm with you. I think Bill O'Brien is Jason Garrett, just without the clapping.
Yeah, it's the opposite. It's like more like the opposite of clapping. Like if Jason Garrett, as Michael Lombardi calls him, Jason Garrett's like the greeter at the casino, right? The guy that hands you the little ticket, pats you on the back, tells you can go get the buffet, stuff like that. Like if Bill O'Brien was working in the same casino, he would be like the guard that came and roughed you up for like counting cards at the blackjack table.
Right. On that note, I'm perfectly willing and ready to move into parting shots. Alex, unless you have anything else, I feel like you stuck the landing on yours without even knowing it.
There we go, man. I will just rest on my laurels and pass it off to Anwar.
But if you have a rant, like, I feel like you got one out, though.
Yeah, there's always more with Alex, man.
Let me also say this, though, about Adam Gase. What I was trying to say is, He's had the thing with his eyes. I think what made it weirder this time was how dark his suit was, and also how he seems to have lost a lot of hair over the last year. I think the fact with the bald head, kind of the googly eyes, just it did make for a weird press conference. But I don't think he was on anything or stuff. If you look back at some of his old press conferences, you definitely see he does the same, darting around with the eyes, real kind of sketchy looking. I just think it's kind of how that guy rolls. So. That'll be my parting shot. I got on to Bill O'Brien and didn't finish my point about Adam Gase.
Hey, Alex, you know, I know you love grocery stores. Like, how do you feel about, like, the self-checkout lane?
Well, it's just not applicable. N-A. I mean, I shop for the family, dude. I'm a work-from-home dad. So those are 10-ish to 15-ish items, you know, at a time. And, when I go, I get way too many. So. No opinion, not applicable. Okay,
just curious. I'm not a fan of it, so I feel like someone should be there to do the work for us. I don't know why I have to now work at the store. I'm not a huge fan of it.
The other thing is, it's like when I go through, and I wouldn't use it anyway because I buy a ton of, like, basically, I avoid like the middle aisles of the grocery store. I don't really buy much from them. I mainly just buy, we just usually eat fruits, vegetables, and like meat, right? So. I buy a ton of my stuff in the produce department. I am not going to go over to the produce stand, weigh my thing, slap a thing on there. You know what I'm saying? Like, half of the function of me going through the line is the lady having to put my cilantro on the scale, typing whatever the cilantro code
is. Cilantro.
You know what I'm saying? Like, well, I'm not going to go. And like every single thing I buy, look up what the carrots are. Are they the organic carrots? Are they the regular carrots? Like, all right, 109926. Have a printed thing out. Do that. Like, I need to do all that to be able to do self-checkout. And so part of you know, not only the fact that I need to because I have too many items, like even if I didn't have too many items, I would still go through the checkout where there's this person doing it for me because I don't ever go through and calculate any of the produce stuff on my own. I just leave that to them.
Anwar, what do you got?
There's nothing past that.
By the way, nobody, we haven't had the mute button thing happen today. Yeah, that makes two out of three podcasts.
That's been pretty good.
Nice. Man.
You know, all I'll say, Ketch, is I just think this is as relates to the transfer portal. I just think this is just the beginning. I think it's definitely we're going to see more of this. I think in some ways, Ketch, I know you may not like this, but hopefully you at least will at least entertain it. Like, I think in some ways there's some blood on our hands for this, because I think the recruiting process and what it has become now has made guys kind of, they've been coddled. They've been put on a high pedestal. I mean, the most interesting thing, Ketch, is where I see guys release their top 20 list on Twitter, their top 25 list on Twitter. Then it's like so blessed to receive an offer from like Elon College, and so blessed to receive an offer from Prairie View. And everything's just about attention, attention, attention. Look at me, look at me. Here's my huddle highlights. Look at me, retweet me. Here's my top 10. Here's my top 5. Look at me, look at me. Everyone's writing about me. And then he kind of gets stressed at the end, because now it starts getting real. And then it's look at me, look at me. And then once we get to college, it's like, oh, well, no one's looking at me. Well, where did my attention go? Well, I don't like this anymore. And this is BS. And so now I'm out. And so I just think that, you know, going forward, I just hope that these guys and start getting some mentors that steer them away from the just look at me type of thing. That's like, let's just stare at me, give me all this attention in the world because I'm a 4-star, or I'm a 3 that's about to become a 4, and I was at this rivals camp and all these other things, and try to get back to like the substance of what is this really about? You know, which is obviously going to some place to play, but also going somewhere to get your education, because at the end of the day, that education is going to carry more weight and mean more to you than anything else. That's it. Clearly, I'm getting old, but that's.
But you know what, Anwar, not to argue with you, but I think social media has changed it more. You know, we've been reported on guys and given them attention for decades. Like, it's not necessarily recruiting. Social media has changed everything, because even the guys that are mediocre prospects want that pop. They want more followers. They want retweets. They want likes. They want these things. I feel like, Dustin, correct me if I'm wrong. We've more and more, like, people talk about recruit. Dustin and I got into this conversation in our virtual town hall that we did, which is, a lot of people on our board signed up for intense recruiting 16 years ago, but recruiting has changed so much that the prospects control the storylines and the narratives more so than the media outlets that are covering them. Like, all we can do now is wait for a guy to release his top 5 or release. It used to be you'd get scoop. You'd go talk to a guy and you'd say, hey, do you have an updated top 5? And they'd give you a top 5 and then you would report that. And that would be a big deal. That stuff just doesn't happen that way anymore. These kids, and I'm not mad at them, but I think social media has changed the game in such a way that I think it's elevated the things that you're talking about even more so than they used to be, you know, a decade ago when guys like Jimmy Clausen once upon a time showed up and did his announcement on the front steps of the College Football Hall of Fame. Like, that happened. And, you know, I think that was like the cusp of what we were talking about, kids taking control of their own stories. And I don't begrudge them for that, but I think it has turned it into even more of a circus-like atmosphere. And I think, Anwar, your point about how healthy it is, I can't tell a kid not to try to get 20,000 followers on Instagram if that's his life goal. But sometimes it can be counterproductive, and I think that's what you're speaking of. I feel helpless in a lot of ways. Like, it's a monster that I helped create, but I don't feel like we control narratives or really dictate them. And the stories that occur the way we used to, everything is in the players' hands these days. And we just sit back and kind of report on what they do, because that's what we have to do. But yeah, man, the 17 and 18 year olds are driving the school bus and they've only had their learner's permit for about 6 weeks. And, you know, if it crashes, it crashes. They're driving. Dustin, scooters. Even want to touch? I can do this. It's your parting shot. You can do anything you want to. If you want to do a checkout line rant on HEB or whatever, you can. I know that you've literally done multiple content pieces on Scootergate. Is that something you even want to touch on, or are we going to leave that alone and do something else in parting shots?
We can touch on it. Last season, Parker Joe Robinson, who was relief pitcher at Texas, told us the story about how his high school, J. Sarah Catholic, which is one of the, you know, powerhouse type programs in California, it had to institute a no boots rule during baseball season, because when he was at prom in his boots, he was dancing so much that I think he hurt his ankle. that's a thing. Like, you can look up J. Sarah has like a no boots policy, because it made him like miss at least one postseason game, I think. So he told that story last year. Now I'm thinking, Texas has got to have a no scooter policy. Like, that's got to happen when you lose David Hamilton to a total freak accident on one of those, you know, little scooters that you see all around town now, that you just flip out your phone and scan the barcode and unlock it, and you just go on your way and start riding down. So yeah, that's a tough one. That's the one guy that they really couldn't afford to miss. Of course, you know, like you said, I've done multiple pieces on him, podcast writing, whatever, but yeah, I would say that Texas probably is going to have a no scooter policy now, and it's going to give any Texas fan that was already sick of seeing those things around the city, it's going to give them even more ammo to want them out of there. But total freak deal, and a total, you know, such an unfortunate thing. Not only a guy that was probably going to be the best shortstop in the Big 12 and one of the best ones nationally, but this was his junior season. I mean, this was the money-making season as it relates to the Major League draft. I mean, I really felt like he could have played his way into being maybe even a second-round pick, which we know is a lot of money come draft time. So, yeah, so Parker Joe Robinson's high school has a no-boots policy, and I think that Texas baseball is probably going to have a no-scooter policy now.
You know what's interesting about that, Dustin? Catches laughing. No, you know, so, you know, I go down, you know, I'm always there in the season, and I always see guys on those scooters, especially the football players, riding those things around campus, because it's just easy for them to maneuver. Those things are everywhere around UT. Dustin can attest to this, right? Wherever you go, there's scooters just everywhere, and guys will ride the scooters up to their facilities and then ride them back to their dorms or whatever. So one of the questions I've asked coaches is, I've asked them multiple times, are you guys worried that guys are going to get hurt on these things? And they just tell them, hey, man, just try to be safe. But based off of what Dustin's talking about, there might be at some point someone just say, you got to stop. But of course, the more you tell young people not to do something, we know what happens.
Yeah, you're going to have coaches deleting those apps from their phones. Like, but now you've got like Lyft scooters, Uber scooters, Lime scooters, and Bird scooters. Like, there's now four different brands of these things that are literally just everywhere around campus. Like, you can't walk a block without seeing one of these things. And yeah, just a very unfortunate fluke deal. And now Texas is without their best returning player and their starting shortstop and their leadoff hitter for the upcoming season.
And I saw something last year that the number of emergency room visits because of these scooters is like grown exponentially. I think it's like up like 200 or 300%, like something crazy, because people are having all these accidents.
That's the thing. Have any of you guys done the scooter thing? Because I never have. Like, I see them everywhere, but I'm convinced I would kill myself on one of those. Like, I'm near a public street. I'm riding a scooter. What could go wrong?
I have done one. So I'll give you a good story. So I think I was in, I think it was KC, and I was going to ride one of those scooters. It was going to be one of the first times. And I knew some people. I met a couple up there, right? And so the guy, I was like, man, so how do you ride this thing? So I had my app. I downloaded it. Catch, seriously. The guy went, he kind of showed me. He went around the corner. He came back like less than a minute later. His hand was all bloodied up. It was all bruised up. He had bit it as soon as he turned the corner.
Yep, that's me. That would be me.
It's kind of like, I mean, you know, it's like those old Razor scooters, which – like, kind of reminds me of riding a skateboard, which I've never been able to do at any point in my life. I don't have the balance and the nerves to get on a skateboard to ride it. But that's kind of what it's like. I mean, I've ridden one around, and you know, I've had a few beers and ridden one around before, and like I'm gonna have to watch it now. Like those things, like if you hit a pothole, which is what Hamilton did, or if you just hit a curb or something like that, like, yeah, man, it could send you to the emergency room.
Yeah. Just, yeah. For the record, my part in shot, you'll never see me on a scooter. I don't know. It just feels weird seeing a 42. If I saw myself on a scooter, I'd be like, what a fucking lame ass. Walk. Get your ass off the scooter and walk. Now, that's my old man rant of the day. I feel like that is definitely something for the kiddos. And maybe like the hipsters. If you're a hipster and you're like 27 and you're riding a scooter, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt because you're a hipster. But if you're otherwise a normal human being with a normal job doing normal things and you've got kids, because I kind of feel that way when I see parents on the bouncy castles, when I take my kids places and I see parents going down the super slides and they're that having exactly a little bit.
Oh, I'm definitely going down slip and slides.
They got a good back still. They got a good back on them still.
Get your ass out of there. That's for 5-year-olds. Like, it's one thing if you've got a baby and you're just going down the slide with your baby so that the baby can do it. But if you're just grown-ups and you're like at one of these bouncy castle places and you're just acting like an asshole, like, have a little bit more self-awareness. And that's how I feel about these scooters. Like, I just feel like if you are at a certain age, I'm going to draw it at 30. If you're over 30 and you're riding around on a scooter, you're fucking lame, man. Walk. I feel the same way when I see them on the little hoverboards and everything. Like, you're 30. Just drive your car. Like, don't get on a scooter. Like, that's a, I wouldn't have thought being on a scooter. No, when I was 18, I'd have been on a scooter. I would have probably done the scooter thing. But at 42, I just see those things and I ask myself, who the hell's getting on these things? And now the guys are hitting potholes and busting their Achilles? No, man, not for me. Because I feel pretty healthy right now, but I guarantee you 2 minutes on a scooter and I'm in for surgery. I'm that guy that Anwar's talking about. I've got blood all over me. I'm picking gravel out of my ass. And I still have to take care of my kids with a cast on? Nope, can't do it. Can't be me. And on that note, I feel like I channeled my inner Alex there for a second. On that note, that has been the Ticket City Podcast. Thanks to our guys over at Ticket City, 1-800 Sold Out, partners with us throughout 2019, as they've been since the launch of the website in the very first place. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll do this again next week. Go over to the Yak. Check out all the podcasts that we're doing. I posted this number on the Orange Bloods earlier in the week, and I showed my guys over 135,000 listens. In the first few months of us doing podcasts, and we're just getting started, but that's something to build on. So thank you for continuing to listen. Thanks for listening to this podcast. We'll do it again next week. Later.